This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, who made headlines this week because a federal judge in Richmond agreed with the Attorney General's case that the individual mandate portion of the president's new health care law is unconstitutional. The court fight, of course, will go on, and everyone expects it to finally end up at the Supreme Court in due time. And Mr. Attorney General, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
This case was a little bit different than the others. The administration keeps citing that two other federal judges have said that the mandate is constitutional, but your case is different because Virginia, prior to the health care law passing, passed legislation in your own state suggesting that you cannot force people in this state to purchase health insurance if they don't want to. How does that make your case stronger, in your opinion, than some of the others out there?
Well, there's two rounds, at least, every constitutional law case. The first round is the motion to dismiss, where the defendant, in this case the United States government, says, oh, the plaintiff isn't injured, or the injury hasn't happened yet. It's called injury and ripeness. And the plaintiff, in this case, is the Commonwealth of Virginia. Well, that statute that passed on a broad bipartisan basis through Virginia last year that protects Virginians from an individual mandate helps us in standing. It's at the motion dismiss stage where it gives us an advantage, because it helps us demonstrate Virginia's injury. The individual mandate and the order to buy health insurance is not something the Commonwealth has to comply with. However, we do have a code of laws and as the Commonwealth, and our code is trumped under the Supremacy Clause because of the federal law. And that is an injury. Even though it's one the U.S. Constitution allows for, it's still an injury. So it helped us in the motion to dismiss stage. Round two is whether or not the individual mandate itself is or is not constitutional, and our law doesn't affect that consideration. But as you noted, the court agreed with our argument that the Commerce Clause, which allows Congress to regulate the much economic activity, does not give them the power to order American citizens to buy a private product. And nor, the second argument, nor is the penalty you have to pay, the monetary penalty you have to pay if you don't buy their government-approved health insurance, a tax. And that's important because Congress has broad taxing power under the Constitution, and that's how they were trying to save the bill if the individual mandate is unconstitutional. So we had to win both arguments to prevail, and we did.
We're talking with Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, who again was victorious in federal court this week on the question of whether the individual mandate was constitutional, the judge ruling it was not. The very next day in the Washington Post, Attorney General Eric Holder and Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius wrote an opinion piece that says that this was a bad decision. They once again brought out the auto insurance argument as to why everyone should have to have health insurance, with the line saying, without an individual responsibility provision, controlling costs and ending discrimination against people with pre-existing conditions doesn't work. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, individual responsibility implies that the individual is making the decision. This is not an individual responsibility provision. They made that up. This is a mandate. It's a command to citizens to buy a product. There's no individual responsibility involved in that. You're just obeying the law that you've been ordered to as to how you've been ordered to behave by your own government. So the federal government's biggest single impediment to prevailing on the Commerce Clause argument, to prevailing on the tax versus penalty argument, and this individual responsibility language is the dictionary. It causes them all sorts of problems in this case. They have to define economic activity as doing nothing, your decision not to buy something. So inactivity has to be the same as activity. Penalties have to be the same as taxes. A responsible individual, one has to obey commands of the government as opposed to actually undertaking initiative for themselves and doing the right thing, which is normally what one would think of as taking responsibility for one's actions.
In that same letter in the Washington Post, when you mentioned the inactivity a part of this, they say eventually everyone's going to need health care, so eventually there is activity on the part of just about everyone. Does that give them any more standing?
Then regulate it at that point in time. It doesn't strengthen their argument. The judge didn't think it strengthened their argument. The constitutional problem with their argument is if they can do this, they can order you to buy health insurance, what can't they order you to buy or do? And the answer is there is no limit on that. And so we've gone from a government of limited enumerated powers to one of sweeping plenary powers. And it's amazing that the Attorney General of the United States would use the auto insurance example. And the reason that's so astonishing is that he surely knows that the states have the power to order you to buy auto insurance or to order you to buy health insurance, as Massachusetts has done. States can do this because all the powers not given to the federal government are left to the states and the people. States do have broader powers than the federal government, but they're acting as if they can do anything. And in fact, a number of them have more or less said as much, including Speaker Pelosi, Senator Durbin, and others during the course of the bill going through Congress.
We're talking with Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli. And last question before we let you get back to your job, sir. You were part of one of the early cycles in November 2009 that showed the public not happy with the course they were seeing from Washington, from this administration and the Congress, that obviously carried over to the midterm elections. Poll numbers probably won't determine whether or not this is constitutional or not in the eyes of the Supreme Court justices.
Hopefully not.
But what do you make of the way the public has reacted to this legislation in particular and the agenda overall?
Well, to the extent that the opinion of the citizens of the country has an impact on the outcome, it can only help us. As you note, justices aren't expected to consider such things, but they read the newspaper like anybody else. They at least see it around them. That doesn't mean it factors in their decision, but if it does, it can only help us, because unlike what the president promised his caucuses, where he would go sell this after they passed it, the person who was demonstrated to be more correct was Speaker Pelosi, who said now that it's passed, we can learn what's in it. And as people learned what was in it, they liked it less and less and less, and with every bit more they learned. So there's no real prospect of people getting terribly excited about this legislation when the president had put on a full-court press through the summer to try and sell it, and all it really did was cost him 60-plus members of his caucus in the House.
Mr. Attorney General, we have to let you go, but congratulations on your win in court. We'll certainly be following it at all the future levels. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Have a great day.
You too, sir. Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.